The Self-Helpful Podcast is brought to you by Ziglar, your premier source for equipping coaches to help leaders and top performers excel professionally and personally. Visit Ziglar.com and let them inspire your true coaching performance. Welcome to the Self-Helpful Podcast. I'm Kevin Miller, and this is the podcast people tune into for in-depth discussions on the latest research from our foremost leaders in self-improvement, so you can be growing and more equipped to live at your fullest capacity in body, mind, and soul. You have some gifting, some inherent skills and talents. Or think of it this way. You have some things that come to you easier than they do to others. I mean, I can look at each of my kids and tell you what abilities seem to come more naturally for some than others, right out of the womb almost. That doesn't make them an expert, but it showcases the areas they're more likely to be able to achieve mastery in. The thing is, what comes fairly easy to us, we often devalue. We just kind of take it for granted. It doesn't seem that impressive to us, and that makes sense. One, because it's just easier, and two, we often end up around other people who can do what we do well, so it doesn't seem impressive. I mean, when I was a pro cyclist, it wasn't so impressive to me because I was always around other pro cyclists. I was mainly focused on all the guys who were better than I was. But you and I, we all have some natural giftings and talents. Once you become aware of them, you must start honing them, and then you'll serve yourself well to figure out how to work at them. Not at all of them. I mean, I think I've got giftings in different areas. Some I don't want to monetize. They're just for my enjoyment, even just for my family. But finding a gift you can monetize is amazing. In this episode, I'm back with Japan's number one self-help guru, Ken Honda. He's author of Happy Money, which was the focus of our first show together. Well, this is my Values, Motives, and Habits show, part two. It's the episode where we go behind the curtain of Ken's life, and we talked about the category of career, and this was Ken's primary focus, helping people find their gifts and monetize their gifts. It's a passion of his, and he finds it to be a primary source of ultimately happy money. When you work at something you enjoy and find great value in, you are happier with the money you get as a result, and even happier to spend it and manage it, save it, invest it. This focus stood out to me, but you're also going to hear Ken discuss topics such as he sees money as spiritual. His focus on relationships is what can he do for another person, which sounds kind of pithy, but it belies the fact that we generally are in front of another person thinking about our own needs. In health and wellness, it's a challenge for Ken, he says, as he loves American food, hamburgers and fries. And in his culture, he's teased for being the chubby guy. So he feels at home over here. Mentally, he struggles with the world's suffering, which he has a sensitive heart for. He works to bolster himself so he can better handle it. As a celebrity in Japan, he's often noticed out in public, and he takes great delight in striking up conversations with fans and getting to know them. I've already gotten feedback on our first discussion together with people just attesting to the joy in hearing Ken Honda's happy demeanor and his desire to serve others. You can find Ken Honda's book, Happy Money, anywhere and connect directly with him at kenhonda.com. Hey, thanks for tuning into this self-helpful podcast. It'd be great if you would leave a review. Best thing is keep the discussion going. Talk about what you hear with Ken in this episode with someone else. You can always connect with me at my website or social media at kevinmiller.co. Next up, we walk and talk through Ken Honda's values, motives, and habits. Ken, we ended our first show together and you talking about people who had businesses that, you know, often folks don't want to go see them, dentist, the mechanic, whatnot, but you brought in their own connection with God to reconcile the good that they're doing. So it was a great segue into this because our first place that I start is spiritual, just the aspect of your own spirituality. And so I'll ask you there, what are the things you value there and then the habits that you put into practice to walk those out?
So I think at the end of your life, what you think of is that what you have done in the past. So it's more of your personal relationship with yourself. So if nobody respects you, but if you're proud of what you've done, you're a happy person. And if everybody worships you, but if you feel lousy inside, you feel like a failure, even though you achieved mega financial success and you won fame. But still, if you feel lousy about yourself, you are just a miserable person. So your personal relationship with yourself is super important. And I think that's when a concept of God or Buddha or whoever, which is higher than us, comes in. And I think I have an influence from my mentors, who are, one of them is a Christian priest. The other one is a philanthropist whose name is Wahe Takeda, who always talk about the heaven or the universe. He didn't really refer to a type of God, a special type of God, but he used to say, even nobody knows, you and the heaven knows. That's what he used to say. So if you know that you're doing the right thing, you can be proud of yourself. So you have to put that criteria in the basis of your life. Otherwise, you get influenced by what other people think. And oftentimes, it varies. You know, when the time changes, they might say good things about you, bad things about you. But you have to be really sure who you are. Otherwise, you lose yourself along the way.
I'm interested on the topic of money, which was our first show together. How have you found people's views, happy, sad money, the energy around money, affected foundationally due to their spirituality or not? Mm-hmm. Does that come into play?
Yes. Yes. So, if you just think of money as a very materialistic ways, you lose a point because there is a spiritual aspect of money. And actually, I'm writing a book on spiritual money.
Oh.
Because money could be very spiritual. But oftentimes people think it's just the numbers and it's just, you know, the assets and also real estate. But I've seen so many dramas in the past 4 decades of my life, and since I was 10, so I'm in my 50s, so I witness ups and downs of people's lives, and I can see there is this spiritual energy behind what's all that. And unless you understand what's going on behind the scenes, you lose a point.
In that aspect, and I'm actually surprised I didn't think about this in the first show. I mean, because we talked about, you know, the essence of money. Like, let's go back hundreds of years. We didn't have money. We just traded goods. It was a value. As you talk about it, it was an exchange. And if we look at that, we're talking about the things I need on a day-to-day basis for survival. This is how, whether it's shelter, whether it's food, water, I mean, literally our the essence of survival is what we're talking about. Yeah. And within that, my gosh, we go back. If you're a farmer, there's only so much you can do. At some point, only God can make it rain. You know, only, I mean, you can't make it rain, at least whatever your view on God, you can't make it rain. So you're just dependent on circumstance or God or whatever, but there's an aspect of faith into our very, again, survival, our sustenance, which is the essence of money. It is an exchange for that. So yeah, it seems that I hadn't thought about it in this way, that my money is an aspect of my faith in something beyond myself, because there's so much of it I can't control, like rain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when we look at our life closely, we have been supported by thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. You know, just a simple thing. I have a beautiful flower in a vase, and then this was grown by a farmer. And there's this glass. I think it came from France, and somebody made it. And I have all the things that are handmade in this place. And every one of the products here are in the process of making, thousands of people were involved. Well, look at the electricity, the wallpaper, and the carpet. I think the carpet comes from China or Iran or, you know, those countries. And this probably comes from US, and this comes from, you know, surprisingly, so many things are, so many people are involved to make my simple life possible.
Yeah.
So when you just start feeling everybody's hard work to make it all possible, even like this, you know, I'm on the other side of the planet where, but still we can talk. Mm-hmm. It's because of the technology that Apple or Microsoft or internet cable company did so much work, and somebody installed a cable. Can you believe that? Thousands of miles between US and Japan. I think that they keep installing new cables. I've seen a documentary, and it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So think of all the people. I'm just with a little bit of a fraction of money, even though we complain our electricity bill is so big. But think of a big boat, you know, installing the cable. Mm-hmm. Did you pay part of it? You know, so everything becomes so cheap because we are all in this together. So if we hire a big boat and install a cable privately, it's going to cost billions of dollars, right? So since we're in this together, so in a sense, we're like avatars, you know, we are connected. We are connected at materialistic level, but unfortunately, we're not connected spiritually yet. So I think that's what I'm going to see happening in a few years after the big economic turmoil, because that way, we realize that we have been connected financially too.
I'm eager for that next book. You know, it's interesting. You're talking about the internet and the technology and the things that we can be grateful for. I now have, we were talking about where I live. So I'm up here in the high mountains of Colorado. My house is at 9,200 feet above sea level in the mountains and in a national forest. And our internet's always been a problem until this year. And I got Starlink from Elon Musk's company. Yeah. And I think I pay $110 a month. I think if, you know, people live in a city for internet, I'm sure you don't pay that much. That is happy money for me to spend. Cause we get good internet way out there in the boonies. And, I'm very grateful.
I'm just curious, you know, how is the Starlink? Is that stable? And how fast is that?
It's been great. Again, we're up in a national forest, so we don't get cell service. We don't get internet. We have no cable. There's nothing that comes up there. We're literally in the middle of a national forest. And most satellite dishes have, you know, latency. It's messy. You can't do stuff like this, voice over internet. And there's limits to it and whatnot. This, we're often getting 100 megabytes down. I should bill them for this ad. But we get great down, and a lot of times 10 to 15 up speed, which is fine. And it's been, we've had one time in, man, how many months has it been? 4 months, 5 months. I guess we've had one time when there was kind of like, hey, the internet's not working for a minute, and it lasts like 15 minutes. I don't know what happened. We rebooted and we were good. So there's my free advertisement for Starlink.
Great. Otherwise, you have to drive down like an hour or, you know, couple of hours.
Well, we're going to go way off tangent here. You want to know what I did? I had a friend up on the ridge who had line of sight to a tower in town. I ran 1,500 feet of coaxial cable up through the national forest and had repeaters on both ends. And that's how we got our internet. And so it worked good until an animal ate, animals would eat the wire or lightning would hit and blow the whole thing out. So that was my,
right?
Yeah.
Personal cable.
Yeah, I've done that for my family out in the woods. And now I am very grateful, and I spend happy money on technology that I have no idea how it works. And, thank goodness. So that's,
right. So, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Now, we are connected, mm-hmm. you know, but unfortunately, we're not connected with our hearts yet. Mm. You know, we're connected. Internet is connected to Iran or, you know, Australia and all the countries. But our cultures and languages divide us.
Yeah.
So hopefully we're going to be connected spiritually. So if something like I'm heartbroken and what's going on in Turkish earthquake, you know. So if we are connected heart level, we could feel whatever is going on in the other parts of the world at the same level that our neighbors are hurting. So I hope we can like heal together like that globally. That's what I'm envisioning now.
Well, Ken, that's my next category here is relationships. Asking you your values, your motives and habits in relationships. And you started off the spiritual question on the relation. And it sounded like first your concern is your relationship with yourself to begin with. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, tell me then about your, the values. You just talked about connecting at a heart level. So what are the values that Ken Honda has in your relationships? What's valuable, most valuable to you?
I think it's like connected to my own satellite, you know, so whatever excites me or whatever guides me, I'm there. So I do things out of intuition. So last year I had this calling to go to Finland, and then I went, you know, westbound to go around the world and did 9 talks together. And so whatever I do doesn't come from financial motives. You know, sometimes it may not make sense. My staff are just surprised and say, are we going to do this? You know, but yes, because I feel like it. And then years later, it come out that it turns out that that was the best decision. Mm-hmm. So I try to do things that may not make sense as of now. So I feel always guided, and I just try to do what's right for that matter. And also in terms of relationship, I always think of a long-term relationship. All the publishers I've had, I have a 20-year relationship, 18-year relationship. My staff have been working, some of them have been working for 10 years. And my students have kept coming to my workshop since the beginning of my work, which is almost like 20 years. So, and I hope for the future, the relationships I have now will last until I die.
Then what I hear is loyalty. I mean, so what are the things that you're doing to keep those relationships strong so that they are long-term?
So I try to think what I can do for the other one, like for the publisher or my friends and my family members, and what I can do for them. And sometimes, you know, I cannot stay with them forever. My daughter is just started out her singing career. You know, she started singing professionally last year. So I know she doesn't spend with me anymore, right? I retired for her for 4 years, but she doesn't remember any of that, unfortunately. And then she is on her own, right? So we just kind of grow apart. So something like that happens with a friendship. But, you know, even though you're a best friend with somebody, you don't have to just eat dinner every day, right? So it's just your heart connection. So I always think of them in my heart, and they have a special place in my heart. So as long as you have a deep connection, even if you don't see them for a couple of years, like especially this COVID thing, the other day I met a friend from America in the United States after 3 years. And I didn't feel that it's been 3 years because it was like yesterday. So if you had a deep connection with somebody, certain years don't affect at all.
When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is, we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine.
ProLawn provides a five-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their five-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer.
Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin. So in some aspect, you're putting quality of relationship over quantity of time together.
Yes, but also quality is fun too. You know, I try to spend quality time with my friends.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I talk to thousands of people all the time, and I'm people call me, I'm a happy panda, because wherever I go, people come. So I'm always surrounded by people. Yeah. with a few hundred people at a party. So I need some alone time too. So I cannot really all the time be with my friends, but I enjoy both. And as long as I have a deep connection with them, I think it's going to turn out to be a longer relationship.
Health and wellness is the next category here, Ken. And so when you look at your personal health and wellness, what are the top values there?
So, since I haven't done much exercises, my wife and my daughter just keep pushing me that I should do more. So I'm just taking a walk more, longer, and I think I should lose some weight. And I'm often teased as a chubby guy. But the other day I was in California, and I was in a restaurant, and usually I'm the fattest boy in a Japanese restaurant. And I was in America, like, look at me, like, I'm one of them. You know? I don't look super heavy in this place, so maybe I should move to U.S.
That's great. So from an exercise standpoint, so not your favorite thing, but you're walking. That's your one, that's your outlet there. Okay. What about nutrition? Yeah. Is there something, what do you have to watch out for nutritionally then?
Yeah. So I like American, food, like hamburgers and potato fries. And then I think I should stay a little bit away. You know, my love for America should be limited for a culture, not food, because so much stuff in America makes me fat. So, and so I try to stay away from sodas and burgers. Yeah. So that kind of place is. So as long as I stay more Japanese food, I think I'm a little healthier, but I love burgers too much.
Yeah, we need to switch places, because my top of the list just about is sushi. So. That would serve us well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I ate a lot of tacos. You know, we don't have many tacos in Tokyo. Yeah. So like the Taco Bell opened up, and there's a huge line for Taco Bell.
Really?
So anybody who just knows how to cook Mexican, I think Tokyo is the next place to go.
There you go. All right. There's the next business opportunity.
Right. So in Tokyo, I miss American food a lot. So. Yeah.
How about the next category is mind, just your mental health and your mental state. And so when, you know, we've got a time period here, I don't know how it is again, globally necessarily, but in North America where we have a mental health, you know, crisis in essence. But so for your own, for Ken Honda, when you think about your own mind and mental health and mental state, where is it you want to be? What do you do for that?
So personally, I think I'm in a very happy place. But when I think of the world and what we're going to experience as a whole, as a human being, I feel somewhat depressing feelings because so many people are going to feel hurt and stress around financial issues because, you know, we're going to experience a lot of traumatic things of losing money and all that. So globally, or subconsciously, I already feel the big heartbreaks in my heart, but I can melt it in my own heart. So personal happiness and also global subconscious unhappiness gets melted in my heart. So I try to balance it out. So even though I hear news, you know, sad news overseas, or just the sad news in my neighborhood, I try to integrate it and then melt it into my heart. So I try to balance out at the end of the day. I balance balance it out into my happiness. And it's been challenging because, you know, you see our world news, so many people are suffering. But at the same time, I can find my peace while I'm watching all the sufferings.
You do talk. I mean, you shared about this in part one together that you do a lot of travel. You've been doing a lot of travel. You're well acquainted with the world globally in that, and it sounds like you found great peace and happiness individually. But you do have a continual heartbreak, as you said, for what you see happening around the world with money and other things. But that is. So you find yourself bolstering yourself. You've got to be in a good place so you can handle the challenges that you see in the world.
Yeah. So as long as I'm staying in my cabin in my, you know, in my, one of my homes in the mountains, I'm happy. I learned a new English expression. I'm a happy camper.
Happy camper. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But a few weeks ago, I was in a car driving to a nice hotel in Mexico, and then I saw a very old woman trying to sell flowers, and it's such a lot of gas and not a good air, a lot of pollution in the air. And then looks like she's in her 70s or maybe older, and she was trying to sell flowers, but she was going like two car lanes away, so I couldn't get anything from her. But I felt a pain in my heart, like in your 70s, you know, she has to be in that environment. So whenever I see something like that, I feel painful. So as much as I want to turn my face away, I try to absorb it in. So I hope my happy money ideas are going to transform the planetary shift. Yeah. You know, I hope it's going to help that. So she doesn't have to do that anymore.
Well, the next category is work, career, business. We talked about this before, and I'm going to ask you your value there, but I feel like you stated it when we talked before, and it is that people are doing work they find purpose in because a product of that is happy money. Yes, is that top of the list value-wise?
Yes, and also I told people in terms of my teaching time, I'm teaching people how to monetize their gifts more. So happy money is a symbol. But I think out of 200 books I published, I think one third of them is around finding your gifts and monetize your gifts. Because expressing who you are has a best chance of inviting happy money into your life. So I'm just showing an example. 20 years ago, I just thought of starting a new experiment. What if I studied something I really love, and by doing that, can I achieve financial independence that way? So if I could show people how to do it, people will start doing more of what they want to do. So I started thinking, I love books. So I thought of starting a bookstore, but I could use my consulting skills and, you know, financial background. So no, I have to erase it out of my list. And then when it comes to books, maybe becoming an author. I've never done that. I never had any education in writing or just literature or anything. You know, I'm just an amateur person who loves books. Okay, this is great. I love books. That's how I became an author. That sounds like a fun thing to do. And as I said, you know, I got this funny inspiration and just started writing. And then I ended up becoming an author a year later. So by following what you love, you can achieve financial independence. So I'm using my example. I've never done it before, but I started following my heart. And one by one, a new door opens. And then a new person, new mentor showed up. And he and she taught me how to write, how to edit, how to publish, and how to sell books. And a couple of years later, I sold a million copies. And a few years later, I sold 2 million copies. And 18 years later, I started publishing in English. So I'm in the process of pursuing my dream true. So my work life has been more than incredible, because I feel so guided and so supported by millions of people. The reason why I'm successful is that people love me and support me. Whenever my new book comes out, people are waiting to buy, because I hear from one bookstore owner saying a few days before my publication, they start getting calls from, you know, their customers. When is Ken Honda's book coming to the store? So I really appreciate that, because they're waiting for my new book. And I sometimes don't release the title of my books, but they're still like waiting for the new book. So I'm forever grateful.
That's incredible. And when you talk about selling millions of books, I think the number that I saw is that you've sold 7 million or upwards of 7 million.
It's almost 9 million copies.
Almost 9 million copies.
Because I've been selling about a few hundred thousand copies a year. So I think it's between 8 and 9 million copies.
Which, for people to know, when a book comes out, an average book, I mean, if a publisher, if they sell 30,000-40,000, they're pretty pleased. So when you're talking millions, it puts it into a frame of reference. I did want to pull out though, Ken, that you said, you know, you're looking for work that you, in an area that you had a passion for, that you love, whatnot. And you said books. I love books. That you looked at different, let's call it vehicles to do that. So I look books. I could do a bookstore. You know, mm-hmm. I could, I don't know how many different vocations there are in the world of books. Hundreds, I assume. You looked at bookstore, there's so many others, and you found one that fit you. So as people are thinking about this and thinking about what are the things that I care about, the categories, the areas of interest that I have, that's one thing. Then it's finding within those, I think we often get very narrow in the opportunities that we think may exist within that interest. And so you went to one, that's not it. You know, maybe you got there quicker than most, but what if somebody goes through 5 different trial and errors of ways to participate in that area of their love before they find the one that actually fits their skills, their abilities and whatnot, which I guess is a great thing too, that as you find that for us to focus on, as you find that area of interest, be aware of what are your skills, what are your abilities, what are the types of tasks and roles that give you energy. Coming back to energy as a topic that you enjoy, are important to find then the fit for the vehicle within that interest that's going to fit.
Yes. So I've done a lot of studies on self-made millionaires, and the research I found is that before they hit the right occupation, they usually experience 6 or 7 jobs before hitting the jackpot. you know, they may end up being insurance business. They may end up being in a restaurant business. But before landing on their field, they have changed many different jobs. So it's like relationships. You know, not many people meet a sweetheart from junior high school and then they end up getting married forever.
Yeah.
You know, we usually meet three or four, sometimes seven people before the right one and then stay for a longer time. So you may need to just change jobs when you feel like it's not the right fit for you. And then the criteria is that you don't feel like working anymore. For me, speaking to thousands of people is not work anymore. It's fun, and it's so exciting because I get to talk to so many different people from so many different countries, and my books are out in 27 languages now, and in a place that I've never been. You know, so my goal, dream is to visit each country that my book is published.
That's fun.
So, this is not work anymore. You know, I can do it without getting paid. I mean, oftentimes, like these interviews, I don't get paid, but I'm doing it because I love it. Yeah. I love this conversation with Kevin because you're such an incredible, incredibly intelligent and a generous person. So, but unless I wrote books and unless I became a speaker, I never got this chance.
Yeah.
So I so appreciate my work to bring me to the right place. And today is here.
Thank you, Ken. I'm grateful and honored. I do want to ask you, you know, with the book, I mean, you talk about that you decided to go after authoring and that within a year or so you were, but I'm assuming that you didn't just sit down with a typewriter or a computer or pen and pencil, whatever it was, write out a book and boom, that was the end. It sold great. And you've never had a bit of teaching or coaching along the way to hone your craft. How did it happen?
Yeah, so before that, I started writing short essays. You know, a friend of mine said, Ken, you have all the time in the world. Why don't you, you know, just write something so we can benefit? And so I wrote two, 3 pages of essays on money and happiness. And all my friends loved it, so they wanted more. So I had all the time in the world. So I wrote 26 page of more like a personal letter to my friends who are struggling with money and business. So I could could share my experiences of why I could retire young and you know how to manage money and how to live with money and all that. And I started distributing among my friends, and they all loved it. So the funny thing is those times we had a machine called fax.
Yeah.
And at the end of my essay, you can order more copies for free to this fax number. So whenever I woke up in the morning, there's just this stack of fax sheets requesting more my free booklets. So I was happy doing just, you know, stapling to 5 and 10 copies and just send them out. While I was taking a walk to my post office, which was my, which became my morning routine. And then I started stapling and I got sore hands after like doing 20. Yeah. And I was complaining that to my friends and he said, why don't you hire a printer? Which I did. So there's also, once again, there's a thing called a phone book and there is a P section printer.
Yeah.
And I found a printer nearby my house. There was internet, but not much, you know, common.
Yeah.
So the guy came with a quote and I said, can I print 200? And he said, no, we do only 1,000. Like 1,000? No, I don't need them. But he said, that's a minimum. So, okay. I said, all right. And I was just about to sign the contract. He said, by the way, sir, can you take a look at this sheet? And then there's a quota for 3,000 copies. And actually, not much difference, only a few hundred dollars. Wow, really? And he said, the most of the cost is on typesetting, right?
Right.
So editing. So actually, the cost, extra cost is just a little tiny thing. So I recommend, you go with, 3,000. And I said, whoa, it was like $5, if it's 1,000 copies. And if it's like $1.50, if you print 3,000. I said, that's a good bargain. And so I just signed the contract. He didn't tell me intentionally how many boxes it'll be. So it just came in with a two small trucks and then drove in front of my place. And then I thought, neighbors are moving in and it's actually my booklets, you know, in boxes. Huh. And I had to empty one room out and then put all the boxes in. And I tried to come up with a good excuse for my wife.
Yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't because that's my booklets, right? I don't know when I came back. There are all boxes here. It doesn't work. So I just said, I'm so sorry. You know, I didn't ask them how many boxes it'll be. 3,000, he said, it's cheap. So I signed a contract. And so I promise you I'll get rid of all these boxes in 3 months. And she said, 1 month, either boxes out or you out. Oh, my God. So I started calling my friends and just, you know, gave 100 here, 200 here, 500 there. And then I got rid of my 3,000 in about 2 weeks. And then I got huge back orders. So I printed another 3,000. Wow. And this time I rented a storage unit. And then I hired two people to just start shipping for free. And by the time I published about 100,000 copies, sold like 20 or 30 times, you know, I did that again. Yeah. A publisher called me. And they're interested in publishing my books. And the rest is history.
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com.
That's an amazing story. And it'd be interesting too. I remember long ago, Seth Godin gave away a lot of books. He said, I'm going to write this book. I'm going to give it away. His publisher didn't like that. And my memory as a story is he ended up with like 200,000 books. I think it was just electronically that he gave away. Then they published the books and it sold like hotcakes. And what he found out is a lot of the people or a majority of the people who got the free book bought the real book. And that was his premise of take what you get, give it away, try to find traction, get feedback, and it'll benefit you.
Yeah, I think my story is like probably like a few years ago because there is no PDF.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, thank you for sharing the story, Ken. And the next category here that I ask everybody is money yes. And finances and wealth. Well, we know your values there are primarily around just as you talk about it, the energy. I kept thinking in my head, you know, the attitude I have money, the emotions that I have around money, but it seems weird to ask you your values here, but that's obviously what you've got the book for. Can I say that? You tell me that your primary value about money is just our feelings towards it, your feelings towards it.
Yeah. So in fact, you know, there's one thing we didn't talk about is a money personality type today.
Okay.
You know, there's a money personality type. There are spenders and money maker and warrior and money in different type. And I used to be a moneymaker. You know, I was excited about making money. But now I became a money indifferent type. I don't pay much attention to money anymore. You know, I of course, I observe the numbers. But I don't pay much attention anymore because it doesn't really matter if I get paid or not. What's important, I would take it. If it doesn't excite me, I don't take it. So I become more indifferent to money. But of course, money is important. But over the last 3 decades, I make more money than I spend. So I don't need any more money to support our family or support our individual needs. So I think if you are more abundant than your survival level, I guess you're more curious about money in ways that how it can impact other people. That's, I think, wealthy people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, they're interested in setting up the foundation and start sharing the money.
Yeah.
So so for me, money is like love angels who can do wonders for other people.
So do you spend more time focused on people's attitude towards money or helping them achieve more money?
It depends, because some people need more money, especially if you're at the survival level. I want to make sure that their family are fed, members are fed, and they will stay out of money-related stress.
Yeah.
I think it's more about priorities for financially challenging situation. And once you have enough, I want you to focus on more of what you can give instead of what you're going to get.
No.
And you have to know when is enough, how much is enough. Otherwise, you're going to get into this rut cycle of rich people. You know, the rich people, why they don't stop earning is like they're in a rut race. Their cage is bigger and their cage is more golden. So yeah. It's golden plated cage, yeah. But it's the same rut race, you know. And then if you just run faster, it becomes a heavier and gold.
Yeah.
And it's a difference.
Well, I am interested in, you talked about the money container somewhat, that mm-hmm. we all have a money container. You obviously have one, and I'm not going to ask you how much money you have or how much money you make, but you're saying mm-hmm. I have enough. I bet you don't have as much as Bill Gates or Warren mm-hmm. Buffett.
Right.
Or, you know, I know people worth, you know, $500 million and whatnot. I don't know how much you have, but you obviously have said, here's how much I have. My money container only needs this much. And you don't have a desire for more, so you're making more than that, and so you're good. You don't have to achieve more. But it does bring into mind, what is that money container? And you obviously decided upon yours, mm-hmm. and you decided, I don't need as much as Bill Gates or Warren Buffett. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So everyone is born with a certain money container type. And then I don't want to run a big organization because it's going to take my time away from my family, or I don't want to have the stress. Instead, I want to use my time to keep on focusing on writing, because that way, or speaking, that way I can give more influence. So I'm in a situation that I'm very, very comfortable with where I am, but I'm called to do more. So I think my money container will be bigger in the future. But I'm not forcing myself to be bigger. I feel like I'm guided toward a direction. I have a choice.
Yeah.
So I've always had a choice for doing more, giving more. But so far, so good. So instead of just leveraging what I have and just, you know, try to get the maximum out of what I do, I try to relax, and then I try to make sure that I feel myself first. Otherwise, you know, if I just try to make it too big, something is going to go wrong.
Yeah.
So, my daughter is now she's doing it on her own. So I think I'm a free person in a sense, you know. So I guess I'll do more. So probably as a result, I get more money, and I think I'll give more money, and I'll receive more money. So I think my money game will be more receiving and giving. That's the next sort of like a level.
Yeah.
But the day-to-day money. So I'll just make sure everybody around me will be okay. And then after that, I'll just try to make sure that my the community members, we have a few thousand membership. I want to make sure that all the members in my community are doing okay.
Last category here, Ken, is the things that you do just for you, to your word of energy, in essence. What are the things that you do? And I know all your work gives you energy, but on a day-to-day basis, what are the things that you do for your own, whether it's fun, play, self-care, the things that just give you the energy to be the Ken that you want to be?
That's a very deep and also fun question. I think I stay very the same, whether I have a little conversation at a shop with a stranger, or sometimes people spot me, so just they want to have a little conversation on the street, in a restaurant. I enjoy talking with strangers. And also, I really enjoy talking with somebody like you, who has a big influence on other people and very generous and open and intellectual. And also, I enjoy my time with my family, and also I'm meeting new friends. So everything gives me stimulation. So people ask me, why can you keep writing? You know, people have writer's blocks. I don't. It's because I get stimulated all the time. So I can write a book right after this, 17 Things I Learned from Kevin, right? So I'm so happy with this beautiful stimulation every day. So somebody like you, and I'm getting other interviews later on this afternoon. I'm very looking forward to that too. It's a Japanese one. And so those things are enriching my life energy-wise. So I always feel like my energy tank is full.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people feel me.
That's the feeling I get from you, and the energy that I get from you, Ken. Man, it's just been a delight to spend this time with you. I appreciate your energy, what you give us in the book about money, but I see that you exude that happy energy in your life. And obviously that's why so many people are wanting your message. Thank you for giving us the time and giving us this message. I'm just honored to give it to my audience and to benefit it from it continually with myself. I'm going to be talking about this with my family and my kids and the energy that they have around money, the feelings around it. Thank you, Ken. It has been a delight.
Thank you so much. I'm sending you all the energy I have, all the blessings to you, Kevin, and your family and all the viewers. I'm wishing all the best from Japan, and I hope to see you in person somewhere, because I love traveling and visiting places. So that's my dream, and I'm living in my dream. So thank you for the support.
Thank you, Ken. It's really great to hear from someone on the other side of the globe in a different culture who's just a kindred spirit. I mean, again, you can find Ken Honda's book, Happy Money, anywhere. Connect with him directly at kenhonda.com. You'll be happy you did. This was part two with Ken. Next is part three, and I'll be discussing these concepts that Ken brought us of happy money, and specifically how the work we do heavily influences how we feel about our money. I'll be discussing it with Tom Ziegler. Thank you, as always, for choosing to tune into the Self-Helpful Podcast. I really hope you got value from the show and you discuss some of the concepts with the people that you know. I most sincerely hope I've helped you help yourself so that you can help others.